Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. And if your breath to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone.
Brilliant co-host Katie Stoker and Ryan Gable, and they're going to come on in a minute. Welcome. It's January 8th. Follow us every Sunday here, itccs.org, at the BBS Radio Network. We dig and plant, and others will reap the harvest. But first, we must break the hard and resisting ground. We're doing that, and you may have received the notice this last week that we are in dire straits financially as a radio program. I sent out a notification that if we don't raise $250 every month, $3,000 a year, the program cannot continue. Now, as always in these dire situations, people pop out of the woodwork at those moments who you never suspect. And a woman came forward from Ontario. She will not be mentioned by name, but you know who you are. And she offered to start a campaign where she would match dollar for dollar any contributions we got for the show, up to $250, provided they're a regular monthly donation. And one of the words she used, one of the, when she was writing to me, she talked about this internal shift that happened in her and how all of a sudden she realized, not only do I have to do this, I can do this. And that, I think, is something we're going to be talking about today, that internal shift we all have to make when we realize, yes, the time has come to act. And so thanks to this good donor, we've already received individual donations totaling almost $1,000. That's about a third of what we need for the coming year. And we've also started to receive regular monthly donations. So that's just an update to let you folks know that, yes, there is a response. There's people out there. As the woman herself said in the email, do not stop this program. It's a lifeline for me and many others. So I hear you. We hear you. And we are continuing. We will continue until we drop and even beyond then. That is my pledge. And so that was very reassuring that that's happening. So if you folks do want to contribute, you can write to us at Republic of Kanata, K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofkanata@gmail.com. Go to itccs.org. You'll notice there a PayPal button in the top right corner. You can donate directly. Also, you can send a check or money order to an address in the States, which is posted on the latest notice at itccs.org. Thank you. Well, why don't I bring on my co-hosts now, Ryan and Katie. Hello to you both.
Hello. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, Ryan. Are you there, Ryan? Well, you know what? Are you there? Well,
yes, I'm here, Kevin. Can you hear me?
Oh, you are, because I know you mentioned earlier you've been having ICE and the National Guard's being called out where you are. Do you want to tell us what's going on at your end?
Oh, there's a tremendous amount of snow, ice, sleet, a horrible winter storm that's coming through Boise, some of the worst weather we've had here in Idaho in probably 100 years or more. And the city sold all their equipment thinking that this would never happen, which, of course, is that exceptionalism in America. We think that nothing like this could ever possibly happen until it does.
Okay, well, you know, that's interesting you say that. It leads into one of our two news items I've got today before we get to the main bulk of our show. And the show, of course, today, we're going to be talking along the lines we have been going over the last little while, which is the coming year and what we mean by reclamation at a personal, a spiritual, and a political level. We're going to get into that, but first, the first news item I just came across my desk today, it's called This is a Coup, Homeland Security Takeover of U.S. Elections. Now, this is quoting an ABC News report. Quote, citing increasingly sophisticated cyber bad actors and an election infrastructure that's vital to our national interests, Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson announced Friday that he's designating U.S. election systems as, quote, critical infrastructure. Given the vital role elections play in this country, it is clear that certain systems of election infrastructure meet the definition of critical infrastructure in fact and in law, Johnson said in a statement. Particularly in these times, this designation is simply the right and obvious thing to do. The determination came after months of review, and despite opposition from many states, it is carrying forward. Such a change in who controls the U.S. election procedure does not require presidential action or congressional approval and only requires the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security to first consult with the Assistant to the President for Homeland Security and Counterterrorism. So that's the news item, folks. The U.S. election process looks like it's going to be under the direct control of the Department of Homeland Security. Goodbye, democracy. What a little of it was left. Comments? Ryan, Katie?
Well, I can't say that I'm surprised, because the cabal, the neocons, the Obama administration is doing everything they can to demonize not only, especially Russia, because they're actually doing so much good in trying to, they're part of the resistance movement. So it doesn't surprise me. And yet, you know, on the same breath, the people, Americans, haven't voted for a president since, I think it's Lincoln. Anyway.
Thomas Jefferson.
Or Thomas Jefferson. So, I mean, it's same color, different shade.
Right.
It's,
yes.
Yeah.
Ryan, what do you think? You live down there.
What was that, Kevin?
I was just wondering your comments about the news item, since you live down there.
Oh, yes. I gave you my comments. Did you not hear them?
Oh, no.
No, I heard Katie. Katie's been talking. Did you say something? Hear a thing.
I was speaking. I did not even hear Katie. There must be a connection issue. I was saying that what it seems like to me is, if you go back through the last couple of administrations in the United States, even back 50 years, you find these executive orders, and through the signing of a piece of paper with a pen, the President of the United States has the ability to federalize and take over all systems of communication, electricity, and the power grid, food distribution, and essentially to federalize all of these different elements within the government and within social societal services. And so I think what you have here is just another federalizing of a key part of American democracy. It's the falling away of the facade that this is a republic, that this is a democracy. And you go back to the time of John F. Kennedy, which was really, in any sense of the word, of what we call democracy, probably the last president under that mirage. And since then, since that coup, the United States of America has been controlled by a offshore elite group of private interests. But again, going back to Andrew Jackson or Abraham Lincoln, it's essentially been like that from the beginning. I think this image we have of a republic or a democracy as this beacon of freedom in the West really only existed during the infant stages of this country. And at some point, there was a hijacking of those principles, a hijacking of those images, and it turned into something that was, of course, I think, imperialist.
Well, now, let me remind folks who are listening about last week's show, because the Republic is live and well at the local level. We had two women on who were from Grant Township, Indiana County, Pennsylvania. That's central west Pennsylvania. And Judy and her daughter were both describing their successful efforts at bringing in what's called a home rule charter, which gives their municipal government a lot of the powers of the state government, especially in their case, to stop this fracking poisoning of their watershed. And they basically, with their local home rule charter, which is based on the common law principle that the people can govern themselves and should govern themselves over against every other authority, under that common law principle, they have said not only is this fracking wrong and do the people have the right to conduct civil disobedience and not be prosecuted for it, but nature itself has rights, that this watershed has rights that are more important than the corporation. Now, they are, to me, regardless of the issue, they are reestablishing what America and any true republic should be about, which is that the people are sovereign, whether that's in their common law courts, in their local assemblies, whatever. And I think that's a very important development. It's almost like, and you find this in history, as soon as tyranny raises its head, there's a counter motion at the local level, at the small level, of people saying, no, we are reclaiming who we are. And I think that's really exciting. We should keep that in mind. Actually, it leads into the second news item. And this is a very, very relevant thing I found. I was just looking through the library the other day, and I came across the Guardian newspaper from England. And they are reviewing this remarkable book that came out last month called The History Thieves by Ian Cobain. And what it is, it's a description of something called Operation Legacy, which the British government brought in as colonialism was winding down, as the British colonial possessions were gaining independence after World War II. They brought in this thing called Operation Legacy. What it was a program whereby any of the archives in these colonial governments that referred to atrocities by the British, religious discrimination, racial discrimination, genocide, any of the things that we've documented so well going on in Canada, any of those records would be put in a special collection and destroyed. Now, how the documents were then replaced, fake documents would then be inserted in what were called parallel registries. So, in other words, all of the bad evidence of what the British did in their colonies was taken out and replaced by information that would make it look like the British presence was benign and very good. In order to, you know, it did a number of things. It got rid of anyone being prosecuted for crimes. It created a whole beneficent history that wasn't actually there, and it got rid of evidence that would provide people the proof that genocide and other crimes were going on. Now, what's remarkable about this, the article says this only went on in certain African and Asian colonies. It leaves out Canada, because what we've witnessed, of course, is precisely that going on in terms of the genocide of Native people here. And I'm sure in America there's a parallel kind of special operation which hid the evidence there as well. In the UBC, where we first found the evidence of murders in residential schools at the University of British Columbia Special Collections, we found exactly the same thing in the evidence. All of the archives have been sifted through, and a lot of references to murders, genocide, sterilization programs had been removed, and they set up the embodiment of this cover-up program called the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that had a mandate that said, no references to crimes by the churches are to be included in the evidence. It's like this Operation Legacy is still alive and well today in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. So all of this stuff has an origin, and we see that there's an actual program that's still in place where the empire is to wipe out any evidence of its crimes. Comments?
So basically, the colonization hasn't stopped.
No.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you know, and as I hear you reading, it reminds me of the Vatican and the mass library that they are presently sitting on.
Yes.
I came across an article about the Dead Sea Scrolls, and a Bedouin shepherd had found these scrolls in a cave, and so. Some of the scrolls were transcribed from I believe it was Aramaic, and they were transcribed, but they weren't able to be fully transcribed because the powers that be got a hold of the scrolls and hoarded them. So I believe it was the Catholic Church that ended up being in their hands, and but what the scrolls reveal is things like the scrolls were actually Sumerian origin, and what the scrolls reveal is that, you know, Jesus did marry and he had children,
right.
And just exposing the lies that the various churches are trying to peddle on,
well, exactly.
onto humanity.
And in terms of the crimes of the Vatican too, Katie, we know from an eyewitness, a Native woman whose adopted uncle was a cardinal, and he took her through the Vatican archives, the sub-archives beneath the Vatican basements.
Uh-huh.
And she said there was hundreds of yards of these files. And in fact, in this Guardian article, they say that there's over 200 miles of secret archives,
yeah,
in the Foreign Office and Colonial Office in London, England, which has a lot of this material, either destroyed. And you know what I found interesting? They said in the article, if you look at it, we're going to post this at itccs.org tomorrow, but it says that in extreme cases of having to get rid of documents, they would simply take them out into the ocean and dump them. Well, it's very interesting that techniques of getting rid of documents, because we've had a number of eyewitnesses on the west coast of Canada saying that when the sterilization hospitals were closed, in the case, for example, of the R.W. Large Hospital in Bella Bella, which was run by the United Church, that was sterilizing any native person en masse who would not go to church. They had to go report for an operation and get sterilized under Dr. George Darby. Now, when the RCMP began their pseudo-investigations into the residential schools in 1995, this administrator, Barb Brown, took all the sterilization records and dumped them out in the ocean. So these protocols are in place, and they're coming from London, they're coming from Rome, and so on. Ryan, what are your comments?
Well, first of all, I'm reminded of George Orwell or Eric Blair's 1984. It sounds like the Ministry of Truth, where you take history, you eradicate or erase that historical text, and you replace it with something that would make the empire or make the imperialist state look as if they are altruists. This is tyranny posing as altruistic. It also reminds me, in relation to what Katie said, about the burning of some of the greatest libraries and repositories of ancient texts and scrolls, such as the Library of Alexandria or the Library of Pergamon in Turkey. These ancient rectories of wisdom and knowledge typically were targeted by church and state by invading armies because they had to eradicate the history of a people so that you could impose your own imperialist tyranny on them without the people becoming wise enough to understand that they have their own culture. So by eradicating that previous culture, you can apply the new culture of the invading people, another form of, as again Katie said, colonialization that continues today.
Well, right. And what's really important to all this process of mind control and destruction of real history is the use of language. And we should talk about that for a little bit, because people often ask, well, why are so many people still ignorant of these genocidal crimes in a place like Canada when we published the evidence for years? It's because they can't look at it and don't want to look at it. But there's a way people's minds are controlled through the use of language. And at the half-hour point, we're going to play an amusing comment about that by George Carlin called Euphemisms. But let's talk for a minute about that, the use of language. I know, for example, in the Guardian article, they make reference to the fact that the archives which held all the material they didn't want people to know about were called special collections. And that word special is a code word for destruction. For example, the Nazis called the destruction of people, mass killings, as special actions. In the residential schools, we found that when children were experimented on, and in the Indian hospitals, it was called special treatment. That word special means destruction. They talked about migrating the files when they were going to burn them. That this language is used by the elites to confuse and to hide things. Go ahead.
I was just suggesting that it's a type of coded language.
Yes. Absolutely, and you got to know what the code means, what the code word means. I mean, you know, you have blatant examples like that, for example, in the word assimilation, which actually means to eat somebody, but Canadians, when they talk about genocide, say, oh, yes, it was assimilation, as if it was some kind of a nice, peaceful process. You know, 60,000 dead children is peaceful.
This is even what the word pedophile means, peta, child, ped, child, and philia, love, the lovers of children.
Exactly. And it's interesting because we make that point with people, and yet they still keep using the word because it's very deeply wired in from a young age, these terms. We don't even know the words we're using, what they mean often.
So are you saying that the meaning is often changed historically so as to confuse the people?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, that's what they do. So you can be using the word, and yet it means one thing. Apology is another word, okay? The government apologizes, and we all think, oh, it means they're sorry and they're trying to make things better. No, an apologetic is to defend your actions in a court of law or in a public arena. So when they're apologizing, they're saying, in the hidden code word, no, we didn't do anything wrong. We're justified in doing it. We're indemnified. We don't have to be held accountable. That's what an apology means, okay?
You represent your actions with words that are the very opposite of what you're doing, and you blame your enemies for things that you are yourself guilty of. It's very
exactly.
Common throughout history.
What, did George Orwell say that? That sounds familiar.
No, that's me saying that. It relates.
Oh, that's
to
you.
Orwell.
Well, that's a Ryan Gable quote, folks. Not George Orwell. Okay,
yeah, that's
good.
That's a Ryan Gable quote. Yeah, the ministry of truth is the ministry of lies. The ministry of love is the ministry of hate. The ministry of defense.
Yeah.
We have that in America, actually. You know, the Pentagon that was constructed in the 1940s, a pentagram is actually a symbol of defense, It used to be called the War Department, and eventually they changed the name to the Defense Department because they had to change the image of what the United States military represented as opposed to a defensive force that became an offensive force.
Well, and Kate and I were talking about this earlier. Any soldier in a war does not think that they're killing anybody. They're defending themselves from somebody. And that's psychologically how you can get young boys to kill each other when they don't want to. By, you know, kind of natural condition of life, you're not going to go kill anybody unless you think you have to.
And, that's right. In fact, you know, the U.S. military has, and other countries as well, have actually used video games where they will, there's a popular, famous video game called Diablo, where you fight these demons, and they used it in a way to train soldiers to see the enemy as inhuman, and so that they would have no quarrels to justify the killing of another person.
Can I throw out something before the break? I wanted to, because we're going to go to, in a few minutes, we're going to go hear our friend George Carlin. There's one of the things I wanted to put out there for people, again, to affirm what we can do in the face of all these lies. There's one example I wanted to use. I came across a document years ago. I was by myself working on this stuff in the UBC library, and I came across this document in the Indian Affairs Archives that they had somehow missed. And it was an app. It was called the Application for Admission Form. It was the form that every Native parent had to sign, or they'd go to jail. And it signed over legal guardianship rights to the principal of the residential school. Well, what's interesting, here's the hidden-handed work, folks. I found that document the very same month that in the press the churches were saying, we're not legally liable for the residential schools. It was the government's fault. Well, there was the document proving that they were both responsible, that the churches were the legal guardian under the authority of the government of Canada and the Crown of England. So what I did is I held a press conference, and I released this document. And during the press conference, two of the United Church officials who had fired me stole some of the documents out of my briefcase. We got that on record.
Yeah,
we got a video of that. But we released that, and their whole house of cards fell apart. That same month, they announced, okay, we'll sit down and start negotiating, because it was proven that they were criminally liable because they were the legal guardians. That one document we released, one person releasing one document, changed the whole face of Canada. After that, the lawsuits began. They started issuing apologies. They started doing the whole thing that led to this TRC whitewash. But it shows you the impact we can have at the right moment. It's like Sun Tzu says in The Art of War, it's not your numbers, it's where you're positioned strategically and your audacity in acting. And it doesn't matter how big the enemy is. And I wanted to put that out. Any thoughts?
Yes. So if you hadn't found that document, then the lawsuits probably would never have occurred.
Exactly, because they were whitewashing themselves. They said, where's the proof that we were responsible? Well, here it is, folks. I think that's one of the reasons they hate me so much.
You think?
Ryan, if you had any comments, if not, we're going to go to our little break here and hear George Carlin. Any words or thoughts about that?
I think I'll reserve myself for the moment. Let's take a break and we'll come back.
Okay. We're going to hear George Carlin, Euphemisms, and we'll be back after the break.
It's worse with every generation. For some reason, it just keeps getting worse. I'll give you an example of that. There's a condition in combat. Most people know about it. It's when a fighting person's nervous system has been stressed to its absolute peak and maximum, can't take any more input. The nervous system has either snapped or is about to snap. In the First World War, that condition was called shell shock. Simple, honest, direct language. Two syllables. Shell shock. Almost sounds like the guns themselves. That was 70 years ago. Then a whole generation went by, and the Second World War came along, and the very same combat condition was called battle fatigue. Four syllables now. Takes a little longer to say. Doesn't seem to hurt as much. Fatigue is a nicer word than shock. Shell shock. Battle fatigue. Then we had the war in Korea, 1950. Madison Avenue was riding high by that time, and the very same combat condition was called operational exhaustion. Hey, we're up to eight syllables now. And the humanity has been squeezed completely out of the phrase. It's totally sterile now. Operational exhaustion. Sounds like something that might happen to your car. Then, of course, came the war in Vietnam, which has only been over for about 16 or 17 years. And thanks to the lies and deceit surrounding that war, I guess it's no surprise that the very same condition was called post-traumatic stress disorder. Still eight syllables, but we've added a hyphen. And the pain is completely buried under jargon. Post-traumatic stress disorder. I'll bet you, if we'd have still been calling it shell shock, some of those Vietnam veterans might have gotten the attention they needed at the time. I'll bet you that. I'll bet you that. But it didn't happen. And one of the reasons is because we were using that soft language, that language that takes the life out of life. And it is a function of time. It does keep getting worse. I'll give you another example. Sometime during my life, toilet paper became bathroom tissue. I wasn't notified of this. No one asked me if I agreed with it. It just happened. Toilet paper became bathroom tissue. Sneakers became running shoes. False teeth became dental appliances. Medicine became medication. Information became directory assistance. The dump became the landfill. Car crashes became automobile accidents. Partly cloudy became partly sunny. Motels became motor lodges. House trailers became mobile homes. Used cars became previously owned transportation. Room service became guest room dining. And constipation became occasional irregularity. When I was a little kid, if I got sick, they wanted me to go to the hospital and see the doctor. Now they want me to go to a health maintenance organization or a wellness center to consult a healthcare delivery professional. Poor people used to live in slums. Now the economically disadvantaged occupy substandard housing in the inner cities. And they're broke. They're broke. They don't have a negative cash flow position. They're fucking broke. Because a lot of them were fired. You know, fired. Management wanted to curtail redundancies in the human resources area. So many people are no longer viable members of the workforce. Smug, greedy, well-fed white people have invented a language to conceal their sins. It's as simple as that. The CIA doesn't kill anybody anymore. They neutralize people. Or they depopulate the area. The government doesn't lie and engages in disinformation. The Pentagon actually measures nuclear radiation in something they call sunshine units. Israeli murderers are called commandos. Arab commandos are called terrorists. Contra killers are called freedom fighters. Well, if crime fighters fight crime and firefighters fight fire, what do freedom fighters fight? They never mention that part of it to us, do they? Never mention that part of it. And some of this stuff is just silly. We all know that. Like on the airlines, they say they want a pre-board. Well, what the hell is pre-board? What does that mean? To get on before you get on? They say they're going to pre-board those passengers in need of special assistance. Cripples! Simple, honest, direct language. There's no shame attached to the word cripple that I can find in any dictionary. No shame attached to it. In fact, it's a word used in Bible translations. Jesus healed the cripples. Doesn't take seven words to describe that condition. But we don't have any cripples in this country anymore. We have the physically challenged. Is that a grotesque enough evasion for you? How about differently abled? I've heard them called that, differently abled. You can't even call these people handicapped anymore. They'll say, we're not handicapped, we're handicapable. These poor people have been bullshitted by the system into believing that if you change the name of the condition, somehow you'll change the condition. Well, hey, cousin, doesn't happen. Doesn't happen. We have no more deaf people in this country. Hearing impaired. No one's blind anymore, partially sighted or visually impaired. We have no more stupid people. Everybody has a learning disorder. Or he's minimally exceptional. How would you like to be told that about your child? He's minimally exceptional. Oh, thank God for that. Psychologists actually have started calling ugly people those with severe appearance deficits. It's getting so bad that any day now I expect to hear a rape victim referred to as an unwilling sperm recipient. And we have no more old people in this country. No more old people. We shipped them all away, and we brought in these senior citizens. Isn't that a typically American 20th century phrase? Bloodless, lifeless. No pulse in one of them. A senior citizen. But I've accepted that one. I've come to terms with it. I know it's here to stay. We'll never get rid of it. That's what they're going to be called, so I'll relax on that. But the one I do resist, the one I keep resisting, is when they look at an old guy and they'll say, "Look at him, Dan. He's 90 years young." Imagine the fear of aging that reveals. To not even be able to use the word old to describe someone, to have to use an antonym. And fear of aging is natural. It's universal, isn't it? We all have that. No one wants to get old. No one wants to die. But we do. So we bullshit ourselves. I started bullshitting myself when I got to my 40s. Soon as I was in my 40s, I'd look in the mirror and I'd say, "Well, I guess I'm getting older." Older sounds a little better than old, doesn't it? Sounds like it might even last a little longer. Bullshit, I'm getting old. And it's okay, because thanks to our fear of death in this country, I won't have to die. I'll pass away. Or I'll expire like a magazine subscription. If it happens in the hospital, they'll call it a terminal episode. The insurance company will refer to it as negative patient care outcome. And if it's the result of malpractice, they'll say it was a therapeutic misadventure. I'm telling you, some of this language makes me want to vomit. Well, maybe not vomit. Makes me want to engage in an involuntary personal protein spill.
Oh, yes. Good old George. It's hilarious. But true. True. And, you know, something that occurred to me when he was talking and was that we're afraid, and we're not just, this just isn't done to us. There's some part of us that needs to use euphemisms because we can't face the truth. We don't want to face the hard truth about life and death and the situation we're in. So we create these fantasies, and language is a big part of it. But what I wanted to ask, and put this out to everybody listening, and Katie and Ryan, is, okay, they control or try to control us through language. We need our own language. How do we get back? We talk about reclaiming ourselves. This is the first step before we can reclaim the law or society. How do we reclaim our own minds? How do we reclaim our own language? What is the language? The simple words we have to employ all the time. Put it out there. What do you think? Comments?
Big question.
I would suggest that the approach to this should be somewhat philosophical. A lot of us, in fact, most people, whether or not they consider themselves to be intelligent or not, find themselves in a difficult position to determine what the purpose of life is and what they should do with their life. And even people that are 30, 40, 50, 60 years old might still not know what they want to do with life. A lot of us have been tricked into believing that we have to work to buy certain items, to live a life that is somewhat happy and successful, and we've been deluded into believing that happiness or success are parts of life that we obtain from birth or obtain by working through this system that was established before we were born. But in truth, happiness or any sense of being at least acceptable with self comes from with introspection. It doesn't come from a church. It doesn't come from a state. It comes from introspection. It comes with community. It comes with understanding that there is purpose in life through the achievement of individual goals. They don't have to be the goals of society, but through communal working, working with in a function with brotherhood and fraternity, if you will, which was a goal of many of the secret societies of the olden days and which still exist today, we can achieve happiness, we can achieve wisdom, and these are things that are not given to us by any one particular group or person. They are held as part of a secret word that was held by the Freemasons, that if we can use introspection to find out what our true purpose is in life through retaining some form of moral and virtue and integrity and ethics, by refining the centers of self through thoughts and desires and emotions, we can achieve something that far outweighs any type of material success. And I think by simply being honest and truthful, not just with others, but mainly with ourselves, we can take back some of what has been taken away from us with these complex languages that deceive us into believing something is harsher or less harsh than it actually is.
I think it has to do, too, with, they talk a lot in psychology about the problem of the dichotomous separation of good and evil in Western culture and how we tend to project our shadow onto people. We take our own personal inadequacies and we project them onto others and think that they're therefore morally inadequate, when it's really our own shadow speaking, and we have to own that. I realize when we're talking about how genocide happens and how people deny it afterwards, it's so embedded in our history. I remember years ago when I was preparing for the ministry, I looked up, we learned Hebrew and Greek at seminary, so we could read the Bible in the original language, and it blew me away. I discovered that the same word in Hebrew for purification was the same word they used for sacrifice, the word kadash in Hebrew. Now, what it means is that you have to prepare yourself, consecrate yourself, purify yourself, set yourself apart so you're not defiled. And part of that process is sacrificing something or someone. So this idea of purification and saintliness is tied up with somebody's got to pay a price. Something or someone's got to be sacrificed mm-hmm. for you to have that. So, in effect, when genocide is not a crime, it's really an act of purification, because in every culture that's used genocide, they see it as a necessary act of state or of religion. We've got to purify the land of the heathens. We've got to purify ourselves, which was the old papal doctrine of indulgence, whereas if you killed in a holy war, you were cleansed of your original sin. All of that is wired into our consciousness. So that's kind of a long way to say, why is it that people aren't upset over 60,000 children in the ground in Canada? Well, because it's not a crime. It's not a crime in their mind, although they can't admit that to themselves. That's why they use euphemisms like healing and reconciliation.
Mm-hmm. You know. Well, to piggyback on that, Kevin, like we are so programmed, and we tend, as human beings, look to authority for truth. Oh, so the more, you know, credentials, the more degrees you have under your belt, the higher the status you have, or the more authority you have, which is you know, giving away our power, as opposed to looking within ourselves for, you know, our conscience, and letting that be your guide, letting our conscience is God being our guide, you know, looking to the higher realms for spiritual guidance. We all have them. Each human being, at least a souled human being, has two spirit guides, and it is their job to help guide each human in this life stream, because, again, we're here for our lessons in soul growth. And how we do here in this classroom called Earth depends on our next soul placement in when we transition. So it's you know, Ryan touched on it, you touch on it, that it is we have to stop looking outside of ourselves and look within.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting, too, in Ephesians chapter 6 in the Bible, they say, our enemy is not flesh and blood, but the spirit and powers of this age. Mm. And they use the term in Greek for principalities and powers, archaikeiousiae. Now, what that means is archons are the rulers, the hidden rulers. That's so what you're saying is we're not up against flesh and blood, even though people act in very bad ways. It's because of a certain thing that possesses them, a certain power, an entity, if you like.
That uses the physical vessel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the enemy, if you like. If you have to think in terms of an enemy, that's what we're up against. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you talk about using spiritual weaponry, well, the truth.
Yeah.
And that is able to be manifested in any one of us. We don't have to look to anyone, like Ryan said. We can take it back. And I wanted to kind of say a practical note to people listening. They often, I'll get emails saying, well, what can we do? Not only educate yourself, we have to transition from mere education to reclamation, to taking action, to take everything back. And because our lives are on the line here, people, we know our backs are to the wall as a species more and more. So one thing people can do listening to this show is gather with your friends every Sunday between 3 and 6, depending on what time zone you're in, or unfortunately 10 or 11 a night over in Greenwich Mean Time in Europe. But listen to the program. Gather some people together in your living room, 3 or 4 friends. Listen to this program every week, and then talk about the ideas and think, what can we do right in our community to enact home rule, to look at these crimes going on, to document it, to do something where we're reclaiming our power? So use this program as an organizing tool in your community.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one practical step you can take.
That's a very good idea.
Go ahead, Ryan. I was going to say part of this is taking responsibility, and a lot of us look for vicarious atonement through authorities or through these divinely created figures. We suffer from an epidemic of ignorance, superstition, and fear in philosophical terms. And by learning and becoming educated, refining those centers of thought, action, and emotions, we can do what all of the old alchemical texts profess to be able to do, and that is transmute our lower nature, that base substance of metal, into spiritual gold. And I think that this is important to understand, because if we go back into the very ancient world, even before Egypt, you find these mystery schools and secret societies that profess to be able to teach people the great truths of nature. Being obedient to God was obedience to the natural order and the natural laws of the universe, of the planetary motions. Astrology and astronomy were no different than one another until the Christian era. And so even if you go and look at the Mayan culture, the Mayans lived in a perpetual state of peace and balance with nature. It was only when that society became, or that culture became, influenced by outside forces they began to practice animal and human sacrifices. But see, there's a difference between a human sacrifice in the sense of the spiritual self and an actual physical sacrifice. And what I mean by that is the ancient cultures believed in human sacrifice, but the human sacrifice was sacrifice of the inner material animal nature. And by sacrificing the animal nature of self, the desire that led to the fall of man in the Garden of Eden, you were able to rise up triumphant like a phoenix out of the ashes, or rise up from the tomb of Freemasonry and many other societies, to become transmuted from essentially an animal with low consciousness, considered dead, to this spiritual form of gold that was illuminated and enlightened to a point that you understood fraternity, brotherhood, and the betterment of the community with selfless actions. It was my point. Only later, when these outsiders came in and misinterpreted these secret teachings, that then animal sacrifice of lower inner self became human sacrifice and animal sacrifice by the slitting of the throat or the disemboweling of victims over sacred rites and rituals and temples, etc.
Mm. Exactly. And this is all really important. And it ties in, of course, to a lot of the crimes we describe. You know, we've done a lot to document child sacrificial rituals that go on through the Ninth Circle, you know, Vatican-connected networks. These are very ancient. They, as we've talked about, they correspond to the old Roman rituals of animal and human sacrifice. But again, the question comes back to, well, we know about these things. What are we going to do about it? I guess I've reached personally a certain intolerance level when I keep reading over the Internet all of the grisly details of all these crimes going on, you know, the Pizzagate, whatever, we go on and on describing it. But after a while, it becomes a form of voyeurism if we're not going to do anything about it. And that's why we need to take the information and say, okay, we know where these people are. As we attempted and succeeded in Montreal 2 years ago, we know where the Ninth Circle operates. We will shut it down. And these people are so sensitive to exposure that they run. All you need is five people standing there making a stink, and they will run. They are not the all-powerful agencies we think they are. So I want to really urge people listening to this, take this evidence and ask yourself, what can I do to make it real in my community? Just like we have to say on a personal level, how do I manifest light, God, the truth within my own life? How do we manifest it in our community? We've got about 5 minutes left or less, and I just wanted to remind people next Sunday, January 15th, is the second anniversary of the proclamation of the Constitutional Republic of Canada. Still mostly an idea right now, but it's a powerful idea because it has the support of 58% of Canadians, who in the recent poll said, no, we don't want any ties with the monarchy. We want a republic. So we've got a lot of potential supporters out there. And it parallels what's going on in America with the attempt to reclaim the republic. They've already done it. They just have to reclaim what was there once and which still resides in the people. We've got to create it in Canada. And so next week, oh, I've already had an offer from Steve Finney, who's one of our warriors in Kitchener, Ontario, to come on the air, talk about, and in other areas of the country too, what we are doing in our community to try to set up this alternative republic under common law. But that'll be next week. And again, we need your input. So write to republicofcanada@gmail.com and follow the work, itccs.org. Let me ask Kate and Ryan if you have any final comments, any things you want to remark on.
I just want to thank people for, A, supporting Radio Free Canada and Kevin, what we're trying to do here. And those who donated... Kevin has great difficulty asking for donations when the time arises. So it's the administration who kind of needs to be the voice of reason, because obviously we can't survive without funds. So we're partway there. Please donate what you can, even a dollar. It makes a difference. So I just want to say thank you.
Thanks, Kate. Ryan, final word.
Yes, and I'd like to say thanks to all who have supported this show as well. It's always been great to work with you, Kevin, and you, Katie. I'd like to just suggest that when we look back into history and we see that there are so-called barbarians and heathens and pagans that worship these gods and goddesses, many of these gods and goddesses, the hundreds or thousands in different pantheons, were seen as literal gods, literal goddesses, literal deities. But these deities were really characteristics. They were symbols of incomprehensible ideas that were interpreted as literal by the profane in society. And it came to be understood that by obeying these gods was not to obey the dictates of some humanoid creature or some humanoid entity, but to obey the gods was to obey the fundamental laws of nature for which we derive the common law to begin. That's my final comment this evening. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Katie.
Well, that's really important, and I also want to ask you both whether you think that in the coming year, like, I know this is a very important year in a lot of ways. I'm just feeling in my bones, but, you know, the fact what sticks out to me and my family is in October is the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. Now, of course, like any great changes, it gets corrupted, it gets moved in directions that deviates from its original spirit. But the very fact that Luther stood up there and nailed the criticism of Rome on the church door in Wittenberg, that began to bring down this ancient corporate system that's been responsible for so much genocide. And I've noticed in the news, the Vatican is doing their best to co-opt this. They're putting stuff out all over the place saying Catholics and Protestants are going to celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. Well, what it's all about is under the false doctrine of ecumenism, the Catholic Church is trying to get everybody to rejoin them. They say, well, after all, we're the Mother Church. Well, you know, it's a ruse under this liberal theological bullshit that says, you know, you can worship the Pope in Rome and not God, and you can still be a Christian. I mean, we have to be very careful this coming year. So I wanted to just finally ask you both, how do we integrate, and you don't have to answer this now, it's something to think about, but how do we bring this theme the unity of the personal, the spiritual, the political. We've got to really bring it together and give people a working model of how they can break from the system. Any final thoughts on that?
Personal responsibility and education. Truly educated man can never be racist or somebody who is spouting hatred about some other type of person or other group because they do and do not believe what they believe or because they look different. Education and responsibility are so key to refining the centers of self and becoming truly illuminated.
Yeah, and that's very true, Ryan. And I mean, I always go to the spiritual, right? Because I've had extraordinary life experiences with the spiritual and, you know, the higher, seeking guidance and help from the higher realms. I firmly believe that we are spiritual beings first and foremost, having a physical experience, not the other way around. And so many people, as I observe, are just spiritually bankrupt, or they just don't know that they have spirit guides who are willing and able and ready to help. So I would say, yeah.
Thanks, Kate. Thanks, Ryan. And in the few seconds left, I want to remind people that we can follow our work at itccs.org, murderbydecree.com. Get our four books. We published this year. And also remember that all the stuff we're talking about today is meant for you to act on. Keep in mind these three things: local people's assemblies, common law courts, citizen militia. That's the constitution of a republic. And they're doing it in the States. We're doing it in Canada. We're going to talk about it more next week. If you want to write to us, republicofcanada@gmail.com. And don't forget, the Reformation takes place in each one of us. It means reclaiming sovereignty, knowing the sacred is within all of us, not within a church, not within any elite system. So I bless you, brothers and sisters. And until next week, stay strong, stay clear, tune in here again. Thank you all. God bless.
There's no place in this world where I'll belong when I'm gone. And I won't know the right from the wrong when I'm gone. And you won't find me singing on this song when I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. Won't see the golden of the sun when I'm gone.